Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today's January 27, 2018, and we're here live for the next 2 hours. Trey, I almost said 2017 again. I think it takes about a good 9 months to get it out of your system. Ladies and gentlemen, before I start my day, you'll see it on the screen later on. I start my morning with a fresh cup of joe, and I go to Sefco Hilltop here in Cameron and get a cup of coffee, small, medium, or large, or extra large. It's great. Go there, check it out. Also, they got specials going on. They got Good Eat sandwiches. You buy one and you get one free. So go there, see the ladies, tell them you said hi, tell them you heard it on the radio, and get yourself some food, smokes, coffee, paper, whatever it is that gets your day going, okay? Give us a call here at the studio at 254-697-6633. We're simulcasting here on KMIL 105.1 FM and KRXT out of Rockdale 98.5. So check it out, all you Rockdaleonians over there. Give us a call to the studio. Say hi. You can send me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Like us on Facebook. Let's get those numbers up. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at Aaron's Gunshop. Lots and lots of good videos to check out. We've got penal codes with the great attorneys here. Super Attorney Rick Dodd and Attorney Extraordinaire Bent Ross Watson going over all sorts of penal codes. So it's free information that can help you out if you got a license to carry, if you don't have one, or you just want general knowledge. So check it out. We've got a very big action-packed show today. Let me tell you some of the highlights that are coming up. Today, three true stories of self-defense from the Concealed Carry magazine. So we're going to learn from these three stories what to do and what not to do in situations that we're going to read today. My license to carry attorney segment is a two-fisted segment today. Both super attorney Rick Dodd and attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson will continue to discuss the possible legal impacts, implications of having PTSD or any other dependency and your gun rights. This should be an intense segment, so spread the word for all those of you who may need to hear this particular topic. In my topic of interest segment, I will go over upcoming events with Aaron's and how you can get involved, so get your calendars ready for that. Today, another segment of Tactical Snacking with the delicious Janae Goodman. With all the flu going around, Janae is going to be spending some more time on soups and stews today. I and so many think that Janae is doing a soup-er job and a stupendous job. Janae is just deliciously awesome. She's good. At 11 o'clock, the voice of law enforcement, retired police chief Randy Dixon, the Duke of Decency, the connoisseur of common sense, the pontificator of practicality. Randy Dixon is the voice of law enforcement. Today's product spotlight, sponsored by ANC Firearms and Heidenhammer, are Glocks. Same bells and whistles on these different models, but different sizes. I'm going to talk and describe how you can apply these to your self-defense scenarios. Go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page and see the picture, and while you're there, like us on Facebook. My special guest today is registered nurse Connie Allison. Connie is very much into her field and has a lot of knowledge and experience in the ER. And Connie will be talking to us about the must-haves for our home, car, and bug-out bags. This is important info, so please take notes. And finally, to close up the show, Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, will give us more words of wisdom and techniques on how to defend yourself. And yes, she'll probably be beating me up again. Y'all like that. I think you're all sadistic. You like to see me getting beat up. All right, let's move to the true stories in real life. This comes from the January issue of the Concealed Carry magazine, and story number one reads as follows. Wisconsin man defends against rock-wielding robber. A 51-year-old Milwaukee man got money from an ATM and proceeded to walk home. That's when a man who had seen him in the money machine decided to rob him. The robber hit his victim in the head with a rock and demanded money. Dazed but still capable, the would-be victim was armed, fired on the robber, hitting him and driving him off. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, okay, what can we learn from this story? Well, let's break it down. Number one, the man got his money from the ATM, may not have paid as much attention as he should have of his surroundings. Otherwise, he may have seen the robber stalking him. Two, the robber should have used a bigger rock. He only dazed his victim. And three, never bring a rock to a gunfight. All right, story number two. Armed Ohio judge fights back against bushwhacker. A county judge in Steubenville, parked at his regular spot near the courthouse and was walking into the building when he was fired upon by a man laying in wait for him. Fortunately, the judge was armed and, though wounded, was able to return fire, giving off 5 shots at his assailant. And our probation officer just behind the judge also drew his weapon and fired on the assailant, killing him. While the assault on the judge was reported nationwide, the fact that the judge was armed and returned fire on his assailant was left out of many of the media accounts of the incident. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, I really don't know what to say on this one except maybe always have a gun and know how to use it. If you're a high-profile individual, start taking alternative routes or routes. Stop doing things routinely. Don't make yourself an easy mark. That's basically all you can do on that. All right, story number three. Illinois Fire Service Officer defends against carjacker. A Chicago Fire Department lieutenant left his car running in a residential neighborhood long enough for a teenager to steal it. Seeing the theft occurring, the lieutenant tried to get the teen to stop, but the young man decided to try to run over the fireman. That's when the lieutenant, who was legally armed under an Illinois concealed carry permit, drew his pistol and fired on the approaching vehicle, shooting the driver fatally in the chest. My commentary. Ladies and gentlemen, I thought you could be ticketed for leaving a running vehicle unattended. A good prosecuting attorney may have a case against the lieutenant saying that the shooting might not have been necessary if the vehicle was attended or off and secured. Sounds like we need attorneys Dodd and Watson to chime in on this one. Did you hear that story, guys?
I did not.
The lieutenant kept his car running just long enough for somebody to steal it, and then the guy decided to try and run him down, so he shot and killed him. And I'm saying, had he not left his car running, which I don't think you're allowed to do, he may have a case for a prosecutor to get himself in trouble.
Yeah, he might be convicted of manslaughter for that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So you got to make sure you know what you're doing out there, people. It can turn around on you in a heartbeat.
Wow.
Okay, let me go now to my opinion piece. The first 15 minutes of the show are always fast and furious, trying to make it to the first break. But my opinion piece this week, ladies and gentlemen, and once again, the number here is 254-697-6633. The opinion piece is titled, "The Randomness of Violence." And attorneys, you may find this interesting because I know you have statistics on crimes and all that kind of stuff. So check this out. There is over 350 million people in this country. If you think about it, the amount of violence done to other people in this country spread out over those 350 million makes violence kind of random. I'm talking violence, not theft, not criminal mischief, but violence towards another person. Actually, if you look at it that way, violence towards you is highly unlikely. But we're not concerned about the odds of violence striking us, but the stakes at hand of a violent act. One of the words to describe randomness is unpredictability. Violence is unpredictable. One moment you're in total peace, then unpredictably, violence will enter your life. The chances of winning the lottery is slim to none, but sooner or later, someone wins. It's the same with violence. Even then, those odds are not good enough when applied toward random violence. The odds aren't good enough because the stakes are too high to even take that good a gamble. The stakes are possible life or death. Violence and injury, sexual assault, or kidnapping. To know there is a chance of random violence is enough for me to train even harder, to prepare even more, to expect the unexpected. Although violence is random, it certainly has the possibility, sooner or later, to meet you head on. At that point in time, you have one of two choices. One, you fail to respond appropriately due to a lack of training, or two, immediately respond, not react, to the situation at hand. Does responding immediately and appropriately ensure success? Absolutely not. But it does maximize your possibility of success. Training and preparing for violence is a lifelong endeavor for a situation that may last 30 seconds to a couple of minutes in most cases. When that dreadful day happens, only you will truly know if you dropped the ball in your response to the situation. Only you will truly know if you didn't train hard enough, prepare enough, stayed alert enough, and responded in a way that could have led to success more easily. Only you will know if after that fact you can stand there with satisfaction knowing that you did your best. Because, ladies and gentlemen, If you fail to train for that dreadful moment, yet somehow survived it, you will have gnashing of teeth. I shoulda, woulda, coulda is too late. The moment has passed, and you'll have to live with that moment for the rest of your life. Take any moment in your life that you failed at something due to a lack of training. It haunts you to this day, doesn't it? It does me. Just magnify that feeling if you failed at performing against a violent act. That would be unbearable, especially if your lack of action caused harm to you or loved ones. So, today's a new day. Gear up, train up, and prepare for a moment in time that hopefully never comes. But if it does, you can then look in the mirror and say, you did your best.
Okay, so
this segment of Aaron's hype.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in on that since you asked.
Go ahead.
Some of my some of the work that I've done in the past has to do with the predictability of violence. And for instance, your previous comment about the fellow at the ATM machine. I mean, if you don't have proper lighting, if you don't have that ATM machine set in a place where it's visible, that's violence that can be predictable. If you have an apartment complex, for instance, where they don't have adequate security, or if they don't have adequate locks on the back door, that is predictability for violence. If you have a parking lot in a major grocery store or one of the big box stores that does not have adequate lighting in the parking lot, that is predictability of violence. And those are the sorts of things that, with proper training, as you suggested, you can predict and you can stay out of those situations. Well, and save yourself from being the victim of violence.
Predictability. That's all. That's a topic of itself we should discuss.
He's a dictionary.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have a complete segment with both Super Attorney Rick Dodd and Attorney Extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson. And we'll be going over PTSD, the legal applications, so on and so forth, and maybe even some continuation of predictability. So we'll see you on the other side. This segment of Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program is being brought to you by Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, LLC. Have you been arrested? Are you in jail and want to get out? Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds at 254-697-6035. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds accepts credit cards and debit cards. Call-ins are also accepted. Conduct your business privately in the Twin Pistol Bail Bonds offices, which are located directly across from the Milam County Sheriff's Office at 707 West 4th Street in Cameron. You're in jail and you want to get out. Let Twin Pistol Bail Bonds help. Call Twin Pistol Bail Bonds now at 254-697-6035 and ask for Dustin Thomas or Lisa Roden. Twin Pistol Bail Bonds, 254-697-6035. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Fall Engine, formerly Cameron's Heat Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Fall Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap and Venture Radio Program. Again, it's January 27, 2018. We're here live. I've got attorney extraordinaire Benton Ross Watson to my left, super attorney Rick Dodd to my right, and we're going to be discussing, how can I say it? Basically, the question came up about PTSD or any other type of chemical dependency and how it may affect your gun rights for getting a license to carry, buying a gun, so on and so forth. So I've got these two gentlemen here. We've got forms and paperwork showing the questions that ask, are you PTSD, or not PTSD, but do you have some type of medical condition, so on and so forth, and we want to discuss it thoroughly, and they're prepared. So, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. It's
good to have you. Where do you guys want to start with this?
I want to start real quick. Last time I had some people tell me, didn't agree with what I said on the show 2 weeks ago about, you know, the mental illness part of it and things to that effect as far as what's going on internally. And I want to...
Well, don't we usually have about half the people disagree with us?
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
That's the nature of our business.
Half, exactly. Almost exactly right. You're always going to have another side that disagree with you. But I want to say, so I had said last time, you're looking at two things. Is a person chemically dependent? Have they been adjudicated, hospitalized, or pled to some kind of insanity or other kind of defect? And I stick by that. And what I want to talk about, what I want to mention first before I let Rick just go off the chain here, because he's, I think I said he's a dictionary, right, is to tell you we're looking at Texas Government Code 411, and it's going to tell you about the eligibility requirements. It's going to say that a person is eligible to have a handgun, a license to carry, get a license to carry a handgun, if the person meets some criteria. One of those criteria says the person is not incapable of exercising sound judgment with respect to the proper use and storage of a handgun. Now, this is not clear from the legislature, which is usual. I don't know why they couldn't just say capable of exercising sound judgment. But they said if the person is not incapable of exercising sound judgment with respect to the proper use and storage of a handgun. And then it goes on later in these subsections to say what that means. It said for purposes of being incapable, right, to exercise sound judgment with respect to proper use and storage of a handgun, it says that if the person has been diagnosed by a licensed physician as suffering from a psychiatric disorder or condition that causes or is likely to cause substantial impairment in judgment, mood, perception, impulse control, and or intellectual ability. Okay, and then it goes on to talk about, you know, if you suffer from a psychiatric disorder that is in remission but likely to redevelop or requires continuous medical treatment to avoid redevelopment. Okay.
Let me say something, too. When you watch this video later, ladies and gentlemen, what he just read, I'm showing it to you on the state form for applying for a license to carry. It's the highlighted box, and you can find that if you go to the DPS website and pull up the application form, you'll be able to read it.
And this is important because right there, that's what you're going to see. The questionnaire, let me see this real quick. It's going to say, actually, it's going to ask you to check yes or no. Have you ever been treated and or admitted to a facility for drug, alcohol, or psychiatric care, or been diagnosed as suffering from a psychiatric disorder or condition that causes or is likely to cause substantial impairment in judgment, mood, perception, impulse control, or intellectual ability? Now, I'm not going to talk about mentally incompetent and adjudicated in the drug use, because that's not really what I'm concerned about. If you've been adjudicated, okay, if you've been hospitalized and things, you're going to You're going to have to check that. Yes, you have one of those things. Our biggest concern here is this D, is this A7 provision, and then D. And I said that it's not that simple. You're not just going to have ADHD and all of a sudden, boom, that's going to disqualify you. And this is my opinion. I'm going to let Rick play devil's advocate and play the other side if he thinks something different. But my thing is, somebody with ADHD or dyslexia. Right, dyslexia is a mental condition that is going to affect your intellectual ability at some point. You know, you see words backwards. You're going to have to go slower. You're not going to be able to perceive things like other people perceive them. It doesn't mean I don't think you qualify under this, and it's because, and this is my last point, because of subsection E. So for everybody that didn't like what I said, I think you need to read the whole statute and go to the bottom and see subsection E. And it says the following constitutes evidence that a person has a psychiatric disorder or condition as described by D1, which is what I just read. And it says involuntary psychiatric hospitalization, psychiatric hospitalization, inpatient or residential substance abuse treatment in the last 5 years, or in the last 5 years been diagnosed as chemically dependent person, right? Or, okay, and this is where I think this is hits home. Diagnosed at any time by a licensed physician that the person suffers or has suffered from a psychiatric disorder or condition consisting of or relating to schizophrenia, delusional disorder, bipolar disorder, chronic dissociative identity disorder, intermittent explosive disorder, and antisocial personality disorder. Now, there's a rule in statutory construction that says inclusion of certain things mean exclusion of other things. And I think that the legislature absolutely knew what post-traumatic stress disorder was. I think they knew what PTSD is. And because they know what PTSD is, it would have been very easy for them to include PTSD within this list of things. Now, it does say relating to. That tells me that these aren't the only six. Okay, but PTSD is a thing in and of itself, and it's a clear condition disorder that everybody knows about, and it's important to society. And I think that if that was something that the legislature absolutely meant to be falling under this, no matter what, they would have included that. I think the same thing with ADHD. I think the same thing with dyslexia. I think the same thing with some kind of anxiety. Okay, and so I do not think just because you have some kind of psychological condition that maybe at some point has a likelihood to give you substantial impairment of your perception in some things in life, okay? Even if you may take intermittently medication to help you, say you have finals coming up, you won't take finals to help you get through that time, I do not think that you're going to qualify as having this psychiatric condition that you need to check yes on the LTC form. I don't care. If somebody disagrees with me, sue me, take me to court. I don't care. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to that. I think that that's where I stand.
Well, Ross, you said the words opinion, and you said the word think about 27 times. And to me, what that tells us is that this statute is in and of itself unconstitutional. And everybody knows that I'm a lover of the Constitution, and that doesn't mean just the Second Amendment, but the whole thing. And one of the parts says if a statute is vague or ambiguous, it's unconstitutional. So when we look at this statute, it says, have you ever been treated? And then it says some other stuff, but basically, have you ever been treated for a drug, alcohol? And does that mean, like when I got picked up in college off the floor in a pool of vomit, that I've been treated? I mean, I felt I was treated pretty well by that. So, you know, maybe I'd have to check yes for that. I don't know, but I don't think so. So the bottom line is here, this is a self-reporting form. So if it's your feeling that you fit into this category, then you should check yes, which kind of gets us into this argument about some of these bipolar situations. I mean, it's like, yeah, one day, I'm fine, but then I change personalities and I'm not so fine. So what day can I carry and what day can I not? See, that's where you get into the vagueness and the ambiguity.
What's it too? Have you been diagnosed by a physician? So I think if a physician has diagnosed you, you're gonna have to check yes. But
you're gonna have to know that though. So many times when a physician diagnoses you, it's not like you go back and read your medical records and say,
I gotta add something though. I had a couple of individuals come to me who were military, said they had PTSD, and then were denied getting the ability to get a license. I don't know the backstory. I don't know if it's something in their records, but they told me that, and so it raises the question, if you have PTSD, I tell people, you know, you be careful what you're saying because it may hinder you from getting a gun. So that's what brought all this up, was at least two people in the military said they were denied access to weapons because they had PTSD.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of this statute depends on who's looking and who's determining and who's going to make the determination of whether you're licensed or not. And that's why I bring up the vague and ambiguity part of it, because we have equal protection under the law. That's another part of our Constitution. So if someone is denied their right to carry for the reason that the reviewer thought it should be denied, when the next person who has the same condition is allowed to carry by a different reviewer, then that's not equal protection under the law. So another reason, then, that this statute is unconstitutional.
Right. And when you do this, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but I believe you sign basically some kind of affidavit, or you give the right to disclose health information for them to do an investigation.
Absolutely, at any time they can look at your records.
Okay, and so, yeah, I mean, they're going to be able to go back and look at your records, but I stand by the fact that if you have some kind of psychological condition at all, if you have a psychological condition, it's gonna fall under, I don't care what it is, because that means it affects your perception. So if you ever have a psychological condition of any kind whatsoever, you're gonna fall under. I don't know how you can have a psychological condition and it not have a likelihood of substantial impairment of judgment, mood, perception, impulse control, or intellectual ability.
Well, if it's a physician diagnosing it, though, Ross, it would have to fall under the DSM-3, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 3rd edition. And those are the ones that describe the requirements for a diagnosis for these particular things that this opportunity to carry allows us. But of course, when you get into those vague words, is where we wonder about it as lawyers. It's like whenever we have to worry and we have to give opinions and we have to think about it and someone else disagrees what it means, that's when you get into that vague and ambiguity part.
And so Matt was telling me too, I think you have I've told the listeners and your students and the people who pay for your classes, your applicants that you help do go through with this, if they were to check, let's say, do they have one of these symptoms, that they check no and it comes back that they do, then they're prohibited from getting a firearm, license.
Based on what some of the literature says, if they find something that's contrary to what you applied there, it could make you ineligible for the license. If you get the license and they find it to be different from what you said later on, they'll take your license away. So if you're saying no to something, which is really a yes, and they find it out later, they're going to revoke your license.
But this application is misleading, too, because this in and of itself, you check yes, it has you fill out another form, like explaining what it is, but this, if you check yes to this, by definition, you're disqualified. You're not eligible.
Exactly.
So I don't understand, it seemed like, oh, you can explain it. Well, no, you've already checked that you have this condition that makes you ineligible. So therefore, why even try to explain it on another form?
Now, on the bottom of this form, it says treatment history information. It says the date, the facility, location, and the final diagnosis. So if you had none of those, if you didn't go to a facility, obviously you don't have a location, you're not going to get a diagnosis. That should be a yes, or that should be a no, you have had no conditions before, if that is not being able to be filled out.
Well, it has the for the last one, a physician for a psychiatric condition that causes or is likely to cause substantial impairment in judgment, mood, perception, impulse control, or intellectual ability. Okay, so for that one, and I mean...
Well, my favorite one is the one where it says if you've ever pled innocent to a crime by reason of insanity... I mean, that kind of flies in the face of guilty until proven innocent, right, Ross?
I mean, yeah, but I can see that, though. I can see, because that would be some sort of adjudication or at least an admission.
Well, it would be an admission, but, you know, if the jury found against you, which about 95% of the time they do find against you, that's an adjudication that you were not insane.
I know. So.
I made some other notes here, too. I just don't want to talk about license to carry in 473. I'm also talking about the ability to get a job because of
funny.
It and having a gun at home. You know how, like, felons are not supposed to have guns in the home? We've discussed this.
Yes, sir.
What about this if you've got some type of condition and it fills on this form because you did go to a facility and you did get a final diagnosis? Does it have any effect on you having a gun at home? Is that taking away your right to bear arms?
So
I kind of threw this one on you, but I was just thinking about it.
So you've got the federal regs too, right? And you wouldn't be able to transfer, but no, I don't think just you having the weapon at home, that's going to affect you. There's even been some cases where a person used that had dementia used a weapon to defend themselves in the home, and the state tried to argue that it was illegal for that person that had the dementia to have the firearm. But in fact, the court said no, out of necessity, the person was allowed to have the firearm at home to protect hearth and home, to protect themselves. And so I think you're going to have a real problem under the Second Amendment if you try to say that people can't possess the firearm at home. And this has nothing to do with that. This is 411. This is license to carry. And so license to carry has nothing to do with unlicensed carry of a firearm, regardless of what kind of firearm it is, especially in the home, which we know is an exception to the requirements. You can be at home, in other words. You can be on your own premises. We talked about the Sciarrini case. Remember the guy with the 1/32nd interest in the parking lot, and he ended up winning because he owned a 1/32nd interest in the parking lot, and he had his Battlestar Galactica weapon on his side, and so that was legal for him to do. And I think same thing would apply here. I mean, maybe transfer. There may be a problem with transferring it based on the federal law. You're not allowed to transfer it to somebody who's been adjudicated as mentally ill. But that's not. We're not. That's a different story.
Due to my lack of knowledge on this, I'm going to ask this question. Does PTSD basically cover veterans?
I know. And pregnant women. or yeah. post-pregnancy condition. Yeah,
okay.
Right?
So, postpartum depression.
I know there's other conditions, which is that's one that I didn't think about. But is basically, though, it's going to be under stress of combat. Is usually that's
well,
where it comes from?
No.
It can be TBI, right?
It has to do with anything. A lot of my clients suffer from PTSD. It's just a post-traumatic stress disorder.
Being married?
A lot of times if they get hit in the head in a car wreck or any other kind of situation, they can have a mild brain disorder. And if it resolves within 6 months, usually what that is a post-traumatic stress disorder as opposed to a traumatic brain injury.
Which is a TBI, which is what I said.
Right. So,
for my sake, I was in a very major car wreck. And for the 6 months...
So that's what's wrong with
that's
you,
That's what's wrong with you. And for 6 months after that, I had, man, nerves like cat on a tin roof. I just wanted to jump out of a car when the G-forces were a little bit too strong. Is that a PTSD
symptom? Absolutely. So what you're describing is a spectrum. I mean, we have spectrums on every kind of illness. I mean, you have a common cold. Some people get over it pretty quickly. You know, they're the one end, and other people die from a common cold on the other end of the spectrum. So some of the post-traumatic stress disorders are more severe than others, obviously.
And so, yeah, I do want to point out, you can go to a psychiatrist and get any kind of note, and I think any kind of report, medical document, saying that, this person had something, but it's in remission and it's not likely to reoccur, or it was misdiagnosed and it no longer should be diagnosed. This person no longer has this diagnosis. That should allow you to, even if you had one of those conditions, to get around it. But
it talks about that in the statute, Ross. It talks about how if you're on continued medication in order to keep it from recurring, that you're not eligible. It also talks about how if it is reasonably likely to reoccur, which is what you just mentioned about getting that note, then you're not eligible. But if it's not reasonably likely, and we get into that reasonable word again, right?
And I will say there is a case, I believe the name is Randolph, but it was a 2008 case. Statute has been amended somewhat since then. But in that case, the physician put in the note that because of continuing medication, there was a misdiagnosis, first of all, and that there is a condition, but with continuing treatment, it's not likely to reoccur, and they're not likely to be able to symptoms. She actually passed. The court said that there was sufficient evidence that she should be allowed to have an LTC, that the application should be allowed to go through. The DPS, the department, appealed that, actually lost. And the appeals court agreed with the trial court that that note was sufficient in itself to, you know, get around any kind of federal or state restrictions on getting a license. Now, like I said, there was some amendments, but the substantial part of the language was still as it is today. But I don't know how precedential that's going to be.
Well,
in interpreting
it's the only
what we're
precedent we have. In fact, there hasn't been any other cases that speak to this particular statute, so we have to look back to that as precedent. But I would like to point out that this is a self-reporting piece of paper. In other words, you're the one that checks yes or no. So if it's your opinion that this is not going to reoccur, then you can check yes and you'll be okay, or whichever one that says I can get this license.
But on this one,
on this one, it's gonna.
One, you don't get your license. On a 4473 form, if you do it, you're filling out a federal document and you're lying. If you say no, what am I trying to say here? You're filling out this form, a 4473, and if you lie on this thing, you can get yourself in trouble.
Well, I'm not suggesting you lie, but if you have a continuing problem. Now, I'm not talking about the diagnosis, okay? So we're talking about something maybe a little bit different here. But if you don't feel like you have this problem and you've never been diagnosed, then you can say, no, I don't have this problem. Even though you may have had it in the past, you felt like you had it in the past. But it's over. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I want to make sure we get this in before we run out of time. If you guys could recap and put down in some type of order form as to, hey, if you're going to do this, this is what you should think about. Don't worry about this, or you need to worry about this when it comes to this or that. So that somebody who is hearing this show right now can say, I know this guy or I know this girl, and they've got this so-called PTSD, and they were thinking about a gun. They can refer to this video and actually hear some legal advice. They've still got to check it out, but at least it can be some of assistance to them.
I think I have no problem saying if you've been adjudicated, if you had a guardian appointed, if you went to a treatment facility, if you got committed, okay, if there, although there's some exceptions, I won't go into that. If you've been committed or something like that, you've been hospitalized, you've been treated by a facility, you've been diagnosed absolutely as having one of those six that I named, the intermittent explosive disorder, the antisocial personality disorder, the the schizophrenia, the delusional disorder, the bipolar disorder, or the chronic dementia. I think if you've been diagnosed with those things, you're going to have to put yes on the form. I think for the other kinds of any kind of mental condition, whatever you got, anxiety, right, PTSD, ADHD, right, do I think maybe you fall underneath this vague and very extremely broad statement that's in the thing? Yeah, possibly. But I think that technically you don't, because E says what kind of conditions that's talking about. And especially when we know that reasonable interpretation is talking about people that are dangerous, cannot exercise sound judgment in the use and storage of a firearm. That doesn't apply to things like ADHD and PT. If you're talking about military guys, those guys are the most trained to use a weapon in the United States. They're the most trained. They're highly trained to exercise discretion too, and when to use it and when not to use it.
I know that, and you know that. But here's what I was going to say just a second ago, or just I was thinking about this. You've got people who are trying to be honest, and they think, well, I went to the medic, or I went to the VA facility, and they said I got PTSD or whatever, however they do it. But in reality, they weren't put in a facility. They didn't truly have a condition. But they think, oh, in my head, I'm PTSD, so I'm going to put it down. And now it's in the system, and the system takes it away and turns them in basically into a criminal. You can't have a gun. How can somebody reverse that problem?
Well, I say check no. If that's all that's happened.
But they already checked yes.
And
now they hear this, and they go, well, wait a minute. I don't have a diagnosis. Somebody told me that, so I put it down on the form.
If you already checked yes, I guess that's a good question. But you can go to court. You can go to a justice court. Right, and you can get the justice court to challenge whatever kind of ruling that they gave you, okay, from the DPS, you know, the Department of Public Safety original application for the LTC.
I remember this woman comes into my shop, okay? She tells me, yeah, I can't get a gun because they told me I got PTSD. And I'm thinking, wow, really? Because at that point in time, there's a lot on the news about medical conditions and how they're going to take away your rights to have guns if you have certain conditions. And it was this big push to have PTSD because the gun grabbers wanted to do anything they could to limit the people getting guns.
I go back
to this poor woman here thinks she's got PTSD. She may have it, but she thinks it's not allowing her to have a gun. So I want to see if these people can have access to get the rights.
The legislature clearly could have put PTSD in subsection.
Well, I got to take issue with your term gun grabber. we're all concerned about people who shouldn't have guns not having guns. I mean, people who have truly been diagnosed with some of these situations or in treatment, they don't need to have guns.
I don't argue that, Rick. I argue the fact that they got this, based on your explanation, it was just a term, and now they feel they can't get it.
I understand that, and that brings me right back to the point about this statute being vague and ambiguous, and that's why your lady is a victim of that vagueness and that ambiguity. I mean, she clearly was someone who should have, in your opinion, gotten a gun. So, you know, then there are other people who may be on medication who clearly look like they ought to have a gun, but they clearly shouldn't be on having a gun.
Right. And so I think you check no if you're not in one of those we just said. And if they deny you, I say challenge it. Challenge the damn thing.
Yeah, that's true. That gives us more business, Ross.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that. I think that this is way extremely vague. I think it's also overbroad.
Yeah, it's
called
unconstitutional when you get down to it.
All right, guys, we're wrapping it up. 30 seconds. It's been always a pleasure to have both of you guys on.
I'm so glad we cleared it up for everybody.
There's mud. Why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you, what your specialties are. And ladies and gentlemen, Rick here, his firm, they sponsor us like the other sponsors do. We could not be on the air without these guys. Thank you so much. Tell everybody how they can get a hold of you, Rick.
They can get in touch with us at 1-800-460-0606. They can look for respectforyou.com. They can come by the office at 312 South Houston here in Cameron. We have an office in Temple, Austin, Conroe. We're easy to get in touch with.
You just ask Rick. He's funny.
Well, Ross's attorney here in Cameron also. It's easy to get in touch with. If you stop by the Dairy Queen or anywhere and say, hey, where's Ross Watson? They'll tell you where he is.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to have mom. We'll see you on the other side. When we come back, we'll have the topics of interest and the delicious Canadian.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bald Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop it at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bald Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Beatros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, January 27, 2018. The number here is 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Go to the website at aaronsgunshop.com. Like us on Facebook. Become a subscriber to the YouTube channel. You get to review like a fantastic segment we just had with Benton Ross Watson and Rick Dodd here concerning PTSD, gun rights, the whole works. We've got all sorts of videos on penal code and guns and ways to manipulate handguns, the whole works. So check it out. Now, today's topic of interest. Later today, I'm going to be doing a private license to carry class with a group of people. It's going to be nice and intimate into the fact that it's just a personal group. Everybody knows each other. And you can do the same thing if you got five or more. So just give me an email or give me a call if you want to set something up for a license to carry. And also, we do refresher courses as well. Even if you got your license, you can attend a new class, or you can get a group of people who've already got a license and refresh it with a private class on your own. So give me a call and we can work that out. February 2nd, not only will it be Groundhog's Day, but it will be Twofer Day at Aaron's. You bring a guest and the guest range time is free. That's the first Friday of every month. Now, February 9th is the next round robin. It's awesome. It's a great way. I keep talking this up because I can't talk it up enough. But the round robin competition enables you for $20 to enter the competition, get some fantastic training, learn how to use different guns, put yourself under stress when it comes to time, accuracy, and unfamiliarity with different guns. If you win, you get a good prize. If you don't win, you win anyway because you got some excellent training. You get to shoot all night for free and compete, train, learn, and maybe even win something. So it's the second Friday of the month. Every month is the round robin competition. If you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the home page up at the top there. There's a link. Click on it. You'll see the rules for the contest. If you go to Aaron's Gunshop YouTube channel, you can see some of the round robin competitions and see how it works to get a feel for it. And you can practice at home. Now, on February 16th, it's ladies' night. That's the third Friday of the month. Ladies get to shoot for free. So, guys, if you're bringing your ladies, the lady has free range time. Ladies, if you bring your lady, they have free range time. I don't know what your gender is in this day and age. If you bring any woman who calls herself a woman, she gets to shoot free that night. It's because it's ladies' night. February 17th, couples only. I'm doing this for the Valentine's thing here. February 17th, couples only, a self-defense at home invasion seminar. It's normally $330 for two people. I've got a special going for $250. And I'm only doing five couples only. Five couples only. So spread the word. Because let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all need it. I don't care how good you are. If you're really good, you still need it. Training never ends. Training is a perishable skill. When it comes to handguns, it's a perishable skill. You need to keep doing it. Seminars. If you got five or more and you want some type of special seminar, give me a call. Send me an email. We'll set something up for you and square you away. Now, Beflicious Janae Goodman comes on the air. I put a picture up on Facebook. And it was a picture of a whole bunch of what looks like, or somebody would say, are contrails, which are the exhaust fumes out of an aircraft, the water vapors that crystallize. And you see them and they shortly thereafter evaporate and you don't see them anymore. Well, if you go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the Facebook page and look at the picture there of all those trails. They're called chemtrails. And let me tell you why they're called chemtrails. They're called chemtrails because they're not a contrail. A contrail is water vapor that after the plane leaves, it dissipates and goes away. The day I took this picture, the sky was a beautiful blue, nothing in the sky. If you look at the picture, see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, almost 10 streaks caused from aircraft going by, and they crisscross like a chessboard. And from the time I saw them to the end of the day, it was a clear blue sky. And with these streaks caused the entire sky, or almost the entire sky, to be completely covered in some type of cloud cover. Okay? Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is not to be a conspiracy theory. I could care less. The reason I'm doing this is when somebody tells me that I don't know what I'm talking about, you just fired me up. I'm looking at an article here. It says, in North Dakota, in parched North Dakota plains, cloud seeding irks some farmers. Let me read a little bit of this. This is Fargo, North Dakota. In the parched northern plains, where the worst drought in decades has withered crops and forced some ranches to begin selling off their herds, a cloud seeding program aimed at making it rain would seem strange to target for farmers' anger. But some North Dakota growers are trying to end the state cloud seeding program that's been around for generations, believing it may be making the drought worse. Besides anecdotal accounts from decades of farming, they cite satellite images of cloud dissipating after being seeded and statistics over two decades that they say show less rainfall in counties that cloud seed than surrounding ones that don't. You watch the plane seed, you will see the storms weaken, said Roger Neshman, 39-year-old farmer in northern part of state, who is leading an effort to see Mother Nature if they can do better on her own. In response to the push, Republican Governor Doug Burgum has asked the State Water Commission to review the program. Let me read this last paragraph here. Some environmental groups have raised questions about the environmental risk of using silver iodide, that's not what I want to read. It says here, we told them they're basically spraying into the clouds iodine and some other. Silver iodine causes water droplets in the clouds to form ice crystals that become heavier and fall faster, releasing rain and small hailstones rather than large stones that could batter crops. So my point is this. The government, if the state does it, you know the government's doing it. And when somebody tells you there's no such thing as planes spraying some type of chemicals out in the sky, now you can say, well, they're full of it because you can see it. You just read an article. I'm showing it to you here on the screen. It shows the plane. It shows the apparatus. And it explains it's been doing it for decades. So when you see these streaks in the sky, all that stuff's coming down to the ground. One, I don't know what it is. Two, there's probably nothing I can do about it. But the main purpose of this is to say, start being aware of your surroundings and your environment. Just don't say, oh, it's a contrail, when it's not. Be aware, be advised, be learned, be informed, just so you can make a better decision, have a better discussion than just saying, oh, it's just contrails. But anyway, that's my opinion. Trey, let's get the delicious Janae Goodman on here, and let's talk about stews and soups.
Welcome back to another segment of Tactical Snacking with me, Janae Goodman. Our temperatures may be back on par for our winter season, but it's not over just yet. And this week, I want to help you dive deeper into our sensational soups and stews to help you keep cozy over those extra chilly nights. If you happen to have missed last week's first installment on soups and stews for the soul, you can find the audio on the homepage of thecultivatedclassroom.com. Stews can use several different thickening agents or starches that change the viscosity of your dish without significantly altering any other components. These thickening agents will usually depend on the dish you're making, but cornstarch and a bit of flour along with your soup base is most common. It is crucial that you mix your cornstarch with liquid before you add it to your stew because cornstarch needs a little bit of help dissolving. The same is true for arrowroot and flour. Trust me, you don't want any clumps of starch cooking in the dumplings in your dish. Personally, I enjoy adding roux when it comes to dairy-based stews. Otherwise, I go for cornstarch or arrowroot. Roux adds a velvety texture, and it's quite simple to make as well. For every tablespoon of oil you have, you want to add 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour. Whisk your flour and oil in a small saucepan over medium-high heat until it has a sandy brown color similar to peanut butter. Keep in mind, your roux will still be extremely hot, so it's best to remove it from the heat once you've reached your desired color and let it cool before you add it to your soup base. Also note, the longer you cook a roux, the less thickening power it will have. For any thickening agent, you'll want to bring the dish to a decent simmer to activate it. Remember that beef stew recipe I promised? Well, here it is, and this recipe is based on the one and only Paula Deen's beef stew, so you know it can't go wrong, y'all. For a gallon of soup, you'll want to season up 2 pounds of stewing beef along with salt and pepper. Brown your meat in 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil before adding in 4 cups of beef broth, 1 teaspoon of Worcestershire, sugar, and salt, 1/2 teaspoon of paprika and pepper, 2 cloves of garlic, 2 bay leaves, and a sliced medium onion. You'll cover your broth and let it simmer over medium-low heat for 1.5 hours. Keep in mind that simmer is the key to any fantastic soup or stew. Bulk it up with those sliced or baby carrots, quartered red potatoes, and chopped celery. Let your covered stew simmer for another 20 to 30 minutes or until your vegetables are thoroughly cooked. At this point, you're ready to thicken your stew. You'll do so by whisking together 1/4 cup of water and 2 tablespoons of cornstarch in a medium-sized bowl. Carefully add 2 cups of your beef stew broth into your cornstarch mixture and mix them together before returning this new thickener into your pot. Give your stew a good mix and make sure that it's nice and thick before serving. Also, don't forget to adjust seasoning as needed. If you're looking for a warm, sensational soup but don't necessarily care for the bulky vegetables and proteins, perhaps blended soups are something you should give a try. Thankfully for you, I've got plenty in my trick bag. They're simple, yet bold and flavorful. A couple of ideas include the classic tomato soup, which can be paired with a delicious grilled cheese sandwich or garden greens, and a roasted fall favorite soup. Pro tip, to cut back on the natural acid in your tomato soup, you can add a small bit of sugar to neutralize the flavor. You're welcome. Oh, and how about that roasted pumpkin or butternut squash pureed soup? All you need is roasted squash or pumpkin, sautéed onion and garlic, vegetable stock, and half or cream to finish it off with. And of course, don't forget salt and pepper to suit your taste buds. Regardless of what ingredients and flavors you decide on, you have the choice to blend half or all of your soup in a food processor or pulse it in.
Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron focuses on cases involving personal injury litigation, including asbestos exposure and mesothelioma. At Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm, you are never treated like a number. Cases are accepted on a contingency basis, so clients do not have to pay out of their pocket. Contact Cabellino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron today. Call 888-MESO-FIRM.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who's been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com. Now time for the master of manners, the communicator of common sense, and the epitome of encyclopedia, Officer Randy Dixon, the voice of law enforcement.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Hope everybody's having a great day today in Central Texas. Nice overcast day outside. It'll be a very pleasant day today, but we've got some more winter weather coming, so don't put your sweaters up yet. Today, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the first of two segments on home entry. At home invasion. I can't get it all in one show, so I'm going to try to break it down into two parts. So I urge everybody to be sure and listen today and then tune back in next Saturday because we've had a second part that's going to be talking about prevention. You know, home invasion happens whether you think they will or not. And in the Central Texas area, it's been more common, especially over to the western part of Bell County and the Waco area. If you watch the news this week, there were a number of home invasions, including some that hurt people. You know, even a few days ago, an unsuspecting homeowner killing was shocked by their door being kicked in and a strange, several strange men entering their home. Obviously, they were there to rob the owner in the house. And while he did get away with some of the jewelry and they got some of the things that the family owned, the one thing they did do is they beat the family and they hurt them in front of their kids. You know, several shots were fired as well as some other things that just scared the homeowners to death, which I could quite understand. You know, some homes now have gotten smart and installed video cameras in and around their homes. You know, while the cameras will hopefully be enough to identify the criminal, it doesn't help you to prevent something like this from happening in the first place. As quickly, and the first obvious step is to protect your family against this type of crime. First thing to do is prevent a crime in your home in the first place. Talked a lot on this show over the last year and a half about, you know, what kind of carry, what to do at your home. Obviously, we're very pro protection of your property. We're pro you getting the right firearm, you practicing the right firearm, and using that firearm if you feel necessary to protect you and your family. But, you know, just having a firearm doesn't do it. You need to try to do some things that are going to hopefully harden your house and keep the perfect people out of it to start with. You know, just knowing that nothing you can do will ever completely prevent a motivated criminal from attempting to enter your house is important. We can't control what that criminal will do, but you can control whether they have the actual ability to enter your home or not. You know, you can take steps to slow them down from entering or having your house so hardened, or you can have it so hardened that they'll make their own decision to avoid it. And hopefully, in all honesty, go to your neighbors or somebody else. We don't want to think about that. But in reality, would you rather have your house broke into or somebody down the block broke into? We prefer none of them do, but you know that's not going to happen. Remember this, and this is something that's really important for you all to remember. Security is simply buying time. That's all it does. There's nothing that's going to completely guarantee you that a person is not going to try to enter your home. That's an important take. And, you know, your home, and like I said, never forget that you are only buying time when you do certain things for your home. You know, locks, alarms, deterrents are all just buying time. And now nowhere near frequent or foolproof enough for us today. Locks can be picked, alarms can send anyone soon enough, or can't send anybody soon enough, and deterrence can be avoided by an observant criminal. What I hope to do today is we can give you some tips on what you can do to not only protect yourself and your family, but how to fortify your home to better resist becoming a victim. And I think that's the whole gist of the show today, is how we're going to do some things that are going to help us and increase our security measures. You know, first thing we have to do is we have to look at what's the difference between home invasion and burglary. There's a big difference. A lot of times people will say, my home was robbed. Well, your home wasn't robbed unless you're in the home under Texas law. Burglary is when someone breaks in and steals your things when no one's there. There's a notable difference between a burglary and a home invasion that you need to know. If you're home, it's a home invasion. If you're not, it's just a simple burglary. Plain and simple, nothing more, nothing less. Criminals don't always know what they're walking into during the day, but at night it's a different story. Most of the time they know what they're doing when they burglarize at night. Who knows, you know, sometimes the intent of a crime or opportunity will more than likely choose the most opportune time to commit that crime. You know, most burglaries, actually true burglaries, occur during the daytime hours, believe it or not, when people aren't home, when people haven't closed their garage doors or they haven't locked the front doors. But most home invasions occur during the evening hours. So that's important. That's an important thing to remember. A criminal that breaks into a residence at night is expecting a confrontation of some kind. They have to anticipate that. Hopefully it'll be short-lived and you shoot them dead. But as we mentioned before, dealing with violent confrontation, you should always avoid a confrontation as possible. But if you can't, know how to use that gun, know what to do, know how to shoot true. This is the same in a home invasion scenario, no matter what you do. You know, we want to think that we're going to always be safe in our home. What's the old saying, our house is our castle? Well, even the castles of old had people trying to, marauders trying to get into them. That's why they built the moats around them that had the drawbridges on them. It's important that we do the things that we know to protect our home. And, you know, let's look at a criminal, the kind of the analysis of a criminal first. It's important to understand how criminals work during a home invasion and then some characteristics of the violent offenders. Primarily, they target homes where they're less likely to face resistance and gain access to important information and be able to steal from you. If you've noticed, the majority of all home invasions that we see in our news have been against older people or elderly people because they're less resistant. There's also the chance that these criminals are just looking for a violent confrontation. Sure, they may be looking for that, or they may be looking for a sexual assault, but we don't have to make that easy for them. Unlike typical burglars, home invasions require homework, and these criminals will spend the time to properly target that person or that residence. Most good burglars, and in my mind there is no good burglar, but most good burglars will watch a home to see when the homeowner is gone. Invaders will go as far as knowing your daily routine. That's important. Don't set a routine. This will include where you work, where you shop, where you hang out. All this information will be collected, determined, and then use that to say, is that the home I want? Do I want to target Randy Dixon's home, or do I want to go somewhere else? These criminals could use deception to approach your residence, posing as the delivery man, a salesman, or even a woman accomplice to knock on the door. We've seen in Austin area where there have been people that have pretended they're delivery drivers, or there are people working for the utility companies. They go up to the door, they knock on the door, they gain entrance into the house, and many times it ends up in a sexual assault or something even worse. You know, it's important, once again, if something doesn't feel right, ask them to leave and request someone else or go with another company. In any regard, as soon as someone does that to you, you need to get on the telephone, you need to call 911, report that to your local law enforcement agency. Have it on record. Have it on file. You know, when attempting to enter your home or your residence, many times the home invaders will employ techniques that we commonly call CQB, means close quarters battle. And you need to be aware of what close quarters battles are, too. I know that you've heard Matt talk anything about how to deal with your people in your home. You've heard our local karate lady who, at the end of the show, talk about how to protect yourself. These are things that you all need to know. You know, many times what the home invaders will try to do, they'll try to use speed, surprise, and violence of action to get you to accomplish and do what they want you to do. Most people will abide. If they're in your home and they ask you to do something, folks, you're almost at the mercy of that person. You've got to do what they ask you to do, especially if they're armed or they've got you in a situation where you are in danger and you can't get out. Once again, if you've got a pistol, you've got a shotgun, you've got whatever you have, you need to know that and what to do with it if the time comes to you. Now, during the first 60 seconds of someone entering your home is the most important. Those first 60 seconds are called the golden seconds. You know, you need to know what to do, plan to do, and how to do it. If you hear noises around your home, you hear someone trying to get into your house, if you have a car alarm in your car, go ahead and activate that car alarm. It's just another level of security for you. It brings attention to your house. Of course, at nighttime, we expect you and hope you'll have lights all around your house. Your house should be lit up like a Christmas tree. That's not costing you that much money, folks. That's cheap security to have those lights on. You know, working in pairs is what most home invaders do. There's very few home invaders that work alone. If you're countered with one, there may be two. So always keep your head on and swivel and remember your situational awareness. Situational awareness is extremely important. You have to be prepared to be restrained with duct tape, a rope, or zip ties. It's a possibility. You don't know how they're going to do something to you. You need to watch some of the YouTube videos. You need to watch some of those things on how to get out of situations such as that. There are a lot of good YouTube videos that shows you how to break. Even the feeblest person can learn how to break duct tape or break cable ties and get out of it. The main thing is just need to be prepared. Home invasion is a serious, serious matter in these days and times. You know, home invasion criminals have been known to be incredibly lazy, believe it or not, while ransacking a home, sitting down to eat, taking a nap, etc. All this while you're tied up or you're, and it's mainly to create some type of a scare tactic to you, to the fact that you're going to be so scared you probably won't even want to report it. If something happens to you, always report it. You know, they want you to watch in disbelief. They'll avoid cliches. I mean, they'll do some things, and what you do is you don't need to mouth off to them while they're in the house. If you're in the house and you can't find a way out, allow them to get out, allow them to do what they need to do, and hopefully you won't be harmed. Ironically, you know, and this is something I think that is really important to remember, ironically, drug dealers are the prime targets for home invasions, believe it or not. The abundance of cash, drugs, and valuables is highly desirable by a lot of the dopers and the criminals. So, you know, that's a plus for most of the people who's listening to this show, that you're not that kind of person. But the thing is, you need to, number one, know your neighborhood. This can't be stressed enough, folks. I cannot stress. Only when you know your neighborhood and places and the people that are strange to your neighborhood can you begin to protect yourself. Always be cautious of changes and shifts in the baseline of your neighborhood. If you're leaving for work in the morning and you see a suspicious car parked around the corner, don't just ignore it. Jot down, circle back around, jot down the license plate number. call 911, call the police and tell them there's a suspicious vehicle in your neighborhood. A number of high-profile crimes were solved in that very manner, folks. You know, walking a dog is a fantastic way to know your neighborhood, learning your neighbor's patterns, what cars they drive, how many people are typically around a resident, et cetera. You know, and if you go walking, the same thing. While meeting your neighbors, it's never a bad thing. Letting them know too much about you could be a good thing or a bad thing. It depends on how you look at it. I've always been the kind of person that I want to know my neighbors, but I don't want them to know all my business. And that's the way we look at it. Note if you see construction vehicles or lawn mowing companies frequent your neighborhood. And don't be afraid to call the police if a strange person's vehicle looks out of place. That's what we get paid for. That's what they get paid for. You'd rather look like a paranoid idiot than regret and prevent something from happening. You could be helping yourself or your neighbors in the future. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, better criminals will stake out neighborhoods, observing patterns of when people come and go. Trust your gut, folks, because if you can't trust your gut, you got bigger problems on your hands. Your gut, your instinct, that's extremely important. And what we're going to do next week is we're going to talk about how to harden the target and how to make a soft target. It's really important, folks, that you understand that there's certain things you can do to make your house not necessarily invasion-proof, but a much easier chance to where it's not a victim of it. So, folks, I want you to tune in next week. We've got a lot to talk about, especially specifics on how to protect your house. But until then, I wish all of you a great week. Be safe out there. And even though next Saturday, Sunday is a Super Bowl, be smart for your Super Bowl parties. Have a great week, everybody, and take care.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm focuses on cases involving asbestos exposure, mesothelioma, birth trauma, defective products, and injury and death resulting from car and truck wrecks. Call the tough, experienced injury attorneys at Capilino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron. Call 888-MESO-FIRM or 254-697-4965.
Arch Coons, the owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's January 27, 2018. We're here live for the next 41 minutes or so. If you want to give us a call here at the studio, it's 254-697-6633. Give me an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. And definitely subscribe to the YouTube channel. Lots of videos there on how-tos and penal codes and all sorts of good stuff. But today, this segment is sponsored by ANC Firearms out of Heidenhammer. Arch Kutz is the owner. The number is 254-983-4417. Arch is an awesome guy. I've known him for years. And he's consistently generous, nice, helpful. He's got a great shop there in Heidenhammer. Clint, Dennis, all good guys, and they're willing to help you. They got lots of stuff. But today we're going to be talking about Glocks. They've got racks or shelves of Glocks. Basically, pretty much any type of Glock that you want to get. And if they don't have it there, they can order it for you. So what I wanted to do today, I had a lot of questions as to what kind of gun should one have, should carry, should buy, so on and so forth. If I've got a limited amount of money, what kind of gun should I get? If I'm going to carry, what should I get? So on and so forth. So what I've done is this. If you look on the website, if you go to the Facebook page, aaronsgunshop.com, and look at the picture there, you're going to see three Glock pistols. They're all 9mm. And I'll be honest with you. I didn't have a Model 17, so I put a Model 21 in the picture. The back gun is a actual 45, but it looks the same thing. But today, actually, when you watch this video, they're all going to be 9mm. So what I've got here is a Glock 17, which is the actual Model 34. It's the longer slide version. I've got a Glock 17, a Glock 19, and a Glock 43. They're all 9mm pistols. And I'm going to describe them a little bit, show them on the video, and kind of give you an idea what they're good for, primarily what they're for, or what you should buy, when you should buy, and for what reasons you should buy. Let's start off with, if you've got to buy one gun, and you only want to carry it in your home, and you're going to get a Glock, you're going to want to get a big Glock, because you want to have max capacity. You're going to want to have the ability to put an accessory rail on or have an accessory rail on it so you can put a light on it like I'm showing in the video right now. This is a Glock 34. It's a 9mm. It's just an extended version of a Glock 17. And the nice thing about these different Glocks, actually what I should do first is show you the differences in the sizes. This is a Glock 34 and I forget the barrel length, but when you put up the Glock 17 next to it, you're going to notice that there's about a half inch difference on the barrel length. Okay, so the Glock 34 is in the rear. The Glock 17 is right in front of it. Now I'm going to get the Glock 19 and put it up into comparison to the Glock 17. And you're going to see, once again, it's about another half inch shorter than the 17. So I'll take the 17 down and I'll bring up the Glock 43 next to the Glock 19. And once again, that one's about 3/4 inch shorter, but it's also thinner than the 19, the 17, or the 34. So now that we have the basic idea of how these guns are shaped, let's talk about it. I ask people, well, what are you going to do with the gun? Are you going to carry the gun, or is it just for a home defense gun? And they say, well, this particular gun, I just want it for home defense. And I said, well, if it's strictly for home defense, you want the biggest gun you can handle, you definitely want to make sure it's got an accessory rail for a flashlight. Because the last thing you want to do is have a gun in one hand and have a flashlight in another hand, and then this way both hands are occupied. What we want to do is, like we're doing in the video right now, we've got the Glock 34. It's the longer version, which seems to fit me well. It settles in my hand nicely. The weight of it just balances out real nice. The little bit of extra length on the barrel just makes me point it a lot easier. I personally like it. So for a home defense gun, this is the way to go. It's basically an idiot gun. Once you load it, you pick it up, you pull the trigger. But what I was talking about, gun in one hand, flashlight in the other, if I've got a gun in this hand and a flashlight in this hand, I can't open doors. I can't really defend myself. I guess I could. I could beat him over the head with a flashlight, I guess. I can't make a phone call. But when the gun has the flashlight directly on it, it frees up a hand for the cell phone, the landline, opening doors, defense, or whatever. So if you're going to have one gun only for the house, and we're talking Glocks, a Glock 34 is great. It's awesome. It's high capacity. It's got 17 rounds in the mag, one in the chamber, and you can attach a flashlight to it. If you don't want to pay the little extra money for a Glock 34, you could go for the Glock 17. It's basically the same gun. It is the same gun, except it's got a half inch shorter barrel. And if you'll notice the two, you'll notice the flashlight on the 34 lines up directly with the end of the barrel. On the 17, the flashlight extends out just a little bit. but it's the same basic gun. But on the Glock 17, if you were hard pressed to carry a weapon concealed, you could carry this because the barrel is a little bit shorter. You could take the flashlight off, or you could get a holster that definitely accommodates the gun and the flashlight. But if you look at the difference with the 34 and the 17, the 34 gets a little bit big unless you're a huge guy to carry as a concealed weapon. The 17 gets in the range for a moderate sized person to carry it concealed. Now, a person asked me, well, I've only got enough money for one gun and I want it to defend my home, but I also want to carry it concealed. Well, I tell them then you basically want a mid-sized gun. You want a Glock 19 if we're talking Glocks, because all the bells and whistles are the same. Once you cock this weapon, once you load it, everything's the same. The angle of the grip is the same. The trigger pull's the same. The sights are the same. Everything's the same on the gun. Except this one is even shorter than the Model 17 by a half an inch. So you could carry this concealed more easily. Is that proper terminology? More easily than the Glock 9, the Glock 17 or the Glock 34. But it still has an accessory rail on it where you could put a flashlight on it and use it for a home defense gun. And the magazine on a Glock 34 and a Glock 17, which are the same mags, will fit in the Glock 19. And if you'll notice on the video, it extends out, but it doesn't matter. It hooks up in the same spot. So even though you got a shorter gun, you could put an extended mag on there and get the higher capacity. And they've also got the 30-round mags. Who wants to reload in a gunfight? So at night, when you put your 30-round mag in there, you're pretty much good for a gunfight without having to change mags. But that's the Glock 19. The Glock 19 is a mid-sized gun that you can use either for concealment or home defense because it does have an accessory rail. Which brings us now to, if you've got the Glock 19 here, I'm putting up the Glock 43 right next to it. And that's about, I don't know, I'd say a half inch to three quarters of an inch shorter. And once again, you'll notice that it's thinner than the Glock 19, which makes it much more conducive as a concealed carry weapon. It's got the same features as the Glock, same trigger, same angle of the grip, same mechanics, same sights. It's just a little bit smaller gun. Easier to conceal, all 9mm. And what's really nice about this is, you know, if you look back in the day when they had 380s out there, because 380s were the biggest round you could carry in the smallest type guns. If you look at it now, the size of a 380 back in the day compared to 380s now was a monster of a gun. The technologies and the materials they get to use guns out of makes it able to reduce the gun size and still make it manageable, like this Glock 43. It's a 9mm reduced into a smaller size gun, which doesn't kick that much, which is easy to conceal and easy to use. I want to make a comment on the accessory rail. People ask, what's an accessory rail? In the video here, you're going to notice at the end of the muzzle, right underneath the muzzle, there's a couple of tracks put into the frame of the gun. There's one right there, and there's the other on the other side, and it's got a slot, a Picatinny slot, going across. So what happens is, let's see if I can release one of these flashlights here. And I can. If you get a flashlight, it's going to have a locking mechanism on it that goes into that slot. If you'll notice on the flashlight, the bar, that bar right there, matches the slot that's in the gun. These rails are utilized with the rails on the flashlight. So we connect the two together. We lock down the flashlight. And you're able to utilize this gun with a flashlight without it falling off. Or you could put a laser on it if you want to. The only problem with a laser, you don't get the illumination that you need at night because you always have to identify your target. In daylight hours or low-lit light, you know, low-lit situations, a laser's okay. However, you got to learn how to train with it. You got to train with a laser because some people, when they use lasers, they miss their mark. It's hard to explain. But with the gun and a flashlight, you have the ability to use one hand and have two objects to secure yourself. So definitely, if you're going to get a gun for the home, get a full-size gun with an accessory rail or the Glock 17, the Glock 34, the Glock 17. If you want to do both, you get the Glock 19. It's a little bit shorter. Not only is it shorter in barrel length, it's a little bit shorter in the grip length. So you can either conceal it or use it for home defense because you have your flashlight capabilities. Or if it's strictly for concealment, you can use the Glock 43 and 9mm. These are all 9mm. They've got the same characteristics in the 45 caliber Glocks. So if you're a 9, 45, or a 40 caliber person, they've got all these different variations in the size guns. but we're spotlighting, highlighting Glocks because they're excellent guns, good price. ANC Firearms and Hide and Hammer has them all. If they don't happen to have one that you're looking for, they can order it, no problem. Great service, great prices. They've been around. They support the show. And if you like this show, support them, because without them, I can't be on the air. So ladies and gentlemen, give them a call at 254-983-4417. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Look at the Facebook page. Look at the picture of the Glocks there. And you'll see the progression of it getting from small to large. The only one I didn't have in there was the Glock 43. Check that out for personal carry. Excellent gun. And they've also got the Glock 42. That's a 380 caliber. It's just a little bit smaller than this one. So check it out. ANC Firearms, Hide and Hammer, 254-983-4417. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to have our special guest, registered nurse Connie Allison. And she's going to be squaring us away when it comes to the necessities of first aid apparatus that you should have both in home, actually in your home, car, and your bug out bag. So we'll see you on the other side.
The owner of ANC Firearms in Heidenhammer, Texas, is an avid gun enthusiast and enjoys helping all of his customers to find the gun that's perfect for them. With a large selection of pistols, rifles, and shotguns, finding the right gun becomes easy. Go to ANC Firearms, located at 5819 U.S. Highway 190 in Heidenhammer, or call them 254-983-4417. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, ammo, knives, and a whole lot more. ANC Firearms, 254-983-4417.
Power. Sometimes you just need more. But what do you do when that yard equipment needs more or just isn't working like it used to? The answer is Cameron's Bald Engine, formerly Cameron Seed Company, where friendly service and quantity work stop at 408 West Bank. They provide all your outdoor power equipment needs. Check out their selection of Echo, Snapper, and Zero Turn Big Dog Mowers. Power through the summer with Cameron's Bald Engine. Call 254-697-3452 or stop in at 408 West Bank.
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-472 at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Well, Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. It's January 27, 2018. We're here live, and I have a special guest sitting to my left, Connie Allison, registered nurse Connie Allison. Connie, welcome to the show. I've been trying to get you on for years now.
Yeah, I know.
So it's welcome
it's
to the
here.
Show.
Thanks. I'm an RN. I've worked in the ER as a nurse for a little over 3 years, and I've been in emergency medicine for even longer. I was an EMT for about 5 years before that.
So you've got lots of practical experience when it comes to saving lives and just that quick reaction.
Yep, everything.
Quick response time, I should say, not reaction. She responds to the situation. Well, we got you on here today because I've been wanting to go over... Actually, I was thinking about doing some follow-up segments. I've been wanting to do this for a while on bug-out bags because I haven't spoken about it in a while. And what you need in your bug-out bag and medical supplies and people with conditions is a very important aspect of being prepared. So I wanted to get you on because you're familiar with all the stuff, what's important, and going over things that you can use that might not necessarily be used for what it was intended to, but you can use it for something else. So I really don't know where this is going to go, this interview. It's going to go all over the place. So kind of keep me in check here. But I wanted to talk about, I'll give you a list of things that I want to talk about. Medical stuff for the home, your bug out bag, things you can use for other things, tourniquets, sucking chest wounds, not breathing, no pulse. And I think that was it. Yeah, let's go over that and start it off with what you think would work best, and we'll just go from there.
All right. Well, you kind of want to assess your ability. So if you have a little bit of knowledge, that's great, and you can use that. If you have no knowledge, then I would suggest looking up how to use different things, specific stuff, or we could do another show at some point
sure.
on how to do that. You want to have some kind of tools to make things into other things because you're not going to have the space to keep everything you need.
Right.
You want like a knife or a multi-tool. You can make bandages out of any kind of cloth or clothing, but what you can't make are clean bandages necessarily. So you want to have at least a few of those. And then worry about the things that are going to kill you, like bleeding to death. Those are the most important things.
Now, let's clarify bandages. You've got sterile gauze and you have bandages. Is there a difference between a gauze and a bandage?
Well, it's all basically different forms of bandages, and then you have go into like non-stick stuff. But in an emergency situation, you're not going to worry about that. It's going to be about keeping something clean and covered, and then about stopping bleeding. So if you have anything that's woven, that's going to help clot and cause that bleeding to stop. That's good. If you have an infection and you are not going to be able to get to medical care very quickly, you also want to make sure it's disinfected. So you want some kind of disinfectant or antiseptic, which you can use any kind of like alcohol. If you don't have any cleaner, you can use liquor, whiskey,
alcohol. It depends on who you're healing or saving, right? Because you would not want to waste good whiskey on somebody who may not be deserving of that whiskey, right?
Right. I guess that would be have to check into your priorities.
Okay. What would be a critical error, fatal error, when it comes to the bandage aspect of it? One that's not sterile, you're picking up a grease rag from the floors. Obviously, that's just ridiculous what I said. But is there something that we wouldn't think about that could be very bad when it comes to the first aid people coming?
Yeah, I mean, it would depend. So, like, if it's something that's bleeding, that takes priority over infection because you can fix infection later if you need to. So stopping the bleeding, if all you have is a dirty rag off of your garage floor, that's what you're going to have to use. If you are not going to be able to get to medical care for a while, then you are going to be more concerned about infection because a wound infection can turn into a full body infection or sepsis, which can kill you. And that you don't want.
Okay. So if a person is more prepared and they've got their bug out bag or mm-hmm. they've got their medics bag or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and they find they should have these rags or these bandages and things like that, they're perceived... Isn't pressure a good way to do it, too, as compared to just having a bandage? Couldn't your hand on a wound actually stop
it? Absolutely. Direct pressure is the first thing you want to try. I mean, if you have, if it's your own blood, it's not a big deal. If it's somebody else's and you're concerned about that, if you have a glove or something, is nice. But if not, direct pressure is always your first line to try to stop bleeding.
Wouldn't direct pressure usually work on a cut as compared to an arterial cut? With spurting?
If it's arterial, it's going to be very difficult to stop with direct pressure. You're not going to be able to stop arterial blood. And the way you know the difference is that if it's from a vein or venous blood, it'll be constant just like trickling of blood, just continuously. If it's arterial, you'll see the spurting, like
the
with
heartbeat.
Okay. Right. That is dangerous. That is the one that will kill you.
Now, let's talk about that. That's a segue dead. Into your tourniquet.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about tourniquets, proper application, types of tourniquets maybe, and you were talking maybe about the medical one, or the military one?
Yeah, the CAT tourniquet. That's what we use in the ER. All EMS carries it. They went away from tourniquets for a little while because they were having difficulty with people knowing when and how to use them. If you have arterial bleeding, you should use a tourniquet if you're not going to be able to get to immediate medical attention. If you don't have a medical attendant right there, you need to watch your bleeding. If you have your tourniquet on there and you're still having the bleeding, it's not tight enough. Now you want to put it on until your bleeding stops. Ideally, you may not have a pulse in that limb afterwards, but it will give you time to get to help.
People have this this thought that if you put a tourniquet on it, you don't let blood go through it, it's going to kill the limb. Explain that.
Eventually it will, but you can leave a tourniquet on there for a couple of hours before there's damage done. And if you bleed to death, you're not going to care if you have your arm.
That's right. Good point.
Right.
What are the different types of tourniquets? I know you can make tourniquets or you can purchase tourniquets. I know I've purchased a few different types, varieties. The one military one with the bar that locks in is a great concept. But why don't you explain to people what they can do to make a makeshift tourniquet and then what they can buy that's actually able to let you use your second hand.
Yeah. So if you haven't never seen a CAT tourniquet, it's a big Velcro strap, goes around, and then it has a like a plastic bar that you twist, and it tightens every time you twist it, and then it has another Velcro strap that goes over that to hold it. If you don't have one of those, then you can make one. You basically any kind of piece of cloth, string, rope, anything that you can cut and make into a any kind of restrictive device, you tie that, then you can get any kind of stick, a pin, anything you have, stick it through underneath the strap, and then basically twist that. Now, the problem there is now you're holding it. You're holding the tourniquet, and you are down a hand. What you can do then is tie a string around the stick through the tourniquet, but you would have to have that in before.
You know, we're radio, but that was a good visual. Your verbiage on it was a good visual. They're going to get to see what you just did on the video, but I always try to explain it verbally so they can get a mental picture. Okay. Necessities. Talk about some things that are actually vital. Vital for the home and vital for your bug out bag. Because I think the things in the bug out bag may not be the same that would be at the house. Because the house may give you more options, whereas the bug out bag, that's it. That's all you got.
Right. At home, you're going to have more space to carry like basic medications and antiseptics. Obviously, like the clean bandages and stuff are more ideal, and they're better at stopping blood than anything. Now, in the bug out bag, some things that you know you can have are maybe different priorities. Things that have multiple uses, like say for instance, tampons. A lot of people. Women need those, right? But you can also use those to stop bleeding. Like if you get shot, you can put those in a gunshot wound.
We just had a question about this. Mm-hmm. Some people say tampons are great because you just plug a hole. But then I come and say it's going to draw blood out.
Well, they are absorbent. So what you can do is you can wrap one in plastic so that it's not sucking that out of there, but it is still something that you can push down into a wound that will
hold
pressure.
You're making a cork as compared to a sponge.
Essentially,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm. That is the difference. That was my next point because that they kind of gone away from using those. Some people use them for nosebleeds, that kind of stuff, but they're made to absorb blood. They're not made to stop blood. Eventually it will after it fills up because that blood will clot.
Okay.
And then unless you get into where you have different
And then at that point, you're just trying to get to some medical location that can take care of the problem. You're just trying to stop that bleeding.
Right. If you don't have that, you can use your finger. It's better than nothing.
Once again, it all depends on who it is, right? Okay.
Right.
What else can we put in that bag?
Well, let's see. We can... paracord's always good because you can make multiple things out of that. A lot of people carry a lot of that.
Let's clarify what paracord is. Ladies and gentlemen, there's different types of cord out there. You got solid cord and paracord. Parachute cord looks like all the other cord, except inside of it, it's got about 7 strands, I believe, of white nylon cord that each one of them can be used for something else. So, and people like make shoelaces out of them in case in a survival situation, they can gut their shoelaces and they got all these nylon strings in there.
Right.
Okay, good.
And then I always like to have like some kind of plastic bag or sheet plastic folded up, because you can use that for a lot of stuff. You can use it for waterproofing your stuff. You can use it for if you're out in the elements, but you can use it too. Also, if you have like a wound on your foot, you don't want to be walking in nasty water or dirt. It can kind of cover that. Or like if you have a penetrating chest injury and you have like a sucking chest wound, it also can help.
Would you clarify that on that? Because there's a possibility, because this is a gun show, somebody in a self-defense mode could get a sucking chest wound. What might be the proper procedure for taking care of that?
Well, you want to cover the hole as soon as possible. You'll basically air sucking into your chest through that wound and is surrounding your lung, making it collapse. If your lung is collapsed, it can't fill up and you don't breathe on that side. You'll see your chest movement. One side will be moving, the other won't. You'll have good air movement on that side.
And so placing the plastic over that seals the hole, mm-hmm. causes your system to do what it's supposed
right.
to do.
Okay. Initially, first thing you want to do is just put your hand over it tight. Put a lot of pressure on it. And then find something else to put over it.
If somebody's wearing clothes, rip the clothes away from that spot to make sure
cut
you get
them off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We talked about tourniquet. We talked about sucking chest wound. What about no pulse? What can we do there?
Well, so if you find somebody that's unconscious and they do have a pulse, you obviously want to breathe for them. You want to call for help immediately before you start, because and then you kind of get into, if it's a child or an adult, you want to breathe for them every time you would take a breath. Now, in an emergency, people's breathing patterns are all kinds of messed up. So about once every 5 seconds, you breathe for them. Not everybody's going to carry a mask to breathe for them. And if you also have to think about who it is, if you're going to put your mouth on them. Now, if someone does not have a pulse, compressions are most important. So you want to do compressions. It's about 100 beats a minute. I like to sing songs in my head. Staying Alive is a good one. It's got a good beat.
Okay.
It's about the same beat. And then,
give us an example. If you sing the song for us and,
No. I'm not going to sing.
If you were to sing the song, give an example though of what you're talking about, the rhythm. What rhythm on that song are you talking about?
You mean like the beat of the
song?
Yeah,
what's the beat?
And staying alive.
Okay.
Okay. You got me to sing
beat.
On that.
So what would you do with your hands though?
Well, so you put hands one over each other. Shown this on the video. Mid-chest, you want to lock your elbows, and you want to go in at about 2 inches. You will feel ribs break if you're doing it correctly.
Really?
Yes, because your rib cage is designed to protect your heart so that stuff can't get to it. But in order to compress your heart, you have to get to it. You have to break the ribs.
Gotcha.
Bigger the person, the more it's going to take. I would recommend that every person, especially if you have children in your house or you're around people that have children, it's always good to take a CPR class. It's different. When it happens in front of you, you're not going to be able to do it if you just thought about doing it in your head.
Or if
someone told you how to do it. You have to physically do it to be able to do it in an emergency.
Are you going
to
know when you broke somebody's ribs?
Probably.
How?
You'll hear it.
Just sounds like a chicken bone.
Or feel it.
Okay.
It feels.
In most cases.
And it's alarming to someone who's not used to that. The first thing
it's
you
alarming
should do
to me listening to you.
In any situation is to take a deep breath. 1 second, you're allowed to panic. And that's all you get. Else you're not going to help anybody else. So you take a deep breath, calm yourself, because your brain will not work in an emergency. You, in the ER, we don't panic and we know what to do based off of muscle memory.
Hold your question 1 second. Show me on the video, when you're doing your compressions, mm-hmm. where you think my ribs would break most likely.
Well, it depends. It would probably along your sternum.
Okay, so.
So where your hands are, because that's where you're pushing.
And there's that piece down here where they all connect to?
Mm-hmm.
So they're gonna, okay, got you. Trey, you had a question?
She's talking about you got to keep calm.
And
how is that any different from what you teach in your class?
Exactly.
Well, that's right. Every aspect of life is going to have a strain.
It's all about maintaining.
Practice.
Yeah.
Practice.
It's all muscle memory. When you first start as a nurse in emergency situations, you freeze. You get the deer in the headlights because your brain shuts off and it's basic fight or flight and you want to run. Or you freeze. That's it. if you don't know what to do because you've done it over and over and over again, you're not going to do it in an emergency. Mm-hmm. I've had so many people tell me, oh, yeah, I know how to do that if my kid chokes, or I know. You don't. You know now, but
it's
they're
amazing,
not choking.
Right? Every aspect of life has its own parameters. Like, I'm clueless when it comes to this. I mean, yeah. I know my basics, but if you were to put me in the ER, I'd probably yeah. shut down because I'm like, I don't know what to do.
So if you're listening, in you're like, oh, I can do that. That's not that hard. Sing Staying Alive and push on their chest. Got it. But it's, and that's essentially the basics of it. There's, you know, more technicality to it. But if you're just, that's the best you can do in the moment because you're not in a medical setting. But if you don't practice it, you're not going to be able to do it. So if that's something you're interested in or you want to do that, you should go and take the class, practice on the dummies. Because when an emergency happens, your muscle memory is going to kick in, and you're going to remember how to do it because you feel like your body do it.
I'm going to title this segment, Registered Nurse Connie Ellison Sings Staying Alive.
Oh, here, please don't. Please don't.
Okay, what do we got, about
no
a minute?
No one wants that.
I don't have a okay. Great
Connie, we're going so fast in here. There's so much other stuff I wanted to go to, but we only talked very little about what's in your bug out bag. Give me some other ideas of what we can do there, because I want to get into the bug out bag segments in the next weeks to come, mm-hmm. and you'd be the precursor as to what medical stuff would go in there.
Well, I can go into a whole list of how you pick out everything. I would suggest some kind, especially if it's for you, you know, you don't, in your car, if you get stranded somewhere, you're going to want some kind of water source. Some way to purify water, or I at least would keep a bottle of water in there for short term if it's meant for I'm going to be gone for a few hours. Mm-hmm. Especially if you have children, they dehydrate easier. And then you want to make sure if you have any specific medical conditions, if you're diabetic, you want glucose in there. You also want insulin, which is difficult because insulin needs to be refrigerated. So you have to think about that. You may want a separate pack that you keep in your refrigerator that you can grab with your stuff. If you have certain medications, heart medicine, that kind of stuff you want to take with you. Those are very important, and you need to take that into consideration, your personal stuff, whenever you're going.
What about the Rambo packet where you're sewing yourself? Would that be a legitimate thing to have, needle and thread?
If you feel comfortable and that you can use it. If you're not going to be able to use it, don't put it in there. It's just taking up space. Same thing with like IV kits. I see a lot of stuff where people want to put IV stuff in their bags. But if you don't know how to start an IV, then it's wasting space.
I think part of it is like one's prepared. You can't know it all. I mean, you can have a generality of it, but
right.
you may not know it all. But hopefully if you've got it and somebody else knows, yeah, I got that. You know, you have it
that's
in the bag
true.
As a backup. Because a lot of times that's what I do. I'm thinking not everybody knows what I know.
Right.
But if I'm there, I can help them, and I know they're not going to have what they need, but if I'm fortunate enough and able to have backup, I can supply them, and now
right.
I just doubled my efforts.
Yeah, but Matt, you've already figured out the 8 people you're going to grab when things hit the fan.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
yeah.
know what skill sets you're planning for.
But you
yeah.
never know, man. I might be
well,
somewhere
I
where
that's,
I don't.
That's true. So if something were to happen and I run into somebody that,
we do a Terminator. Come with me
so,
if you want to live, you know?
Well, so like say, you know, you're in a situation and you need an IV. I don't have any IV stuff, but you have it. You don't know how to use it. But I could use it.
It's like you saying, damn, if I only had an IV. Hey, I got one, you know, square away.
That's true. If you have extra space, for sure. But if you have a limited amount of space, mm-hmm. I wouldn't put stuff in there that you're not.
And you got to consider your body strength, too. If you're not able to carry this big, right. huge freaking rucksack, you got to keep it slim and trim, tight and light.
Yeah.
Okay, we better wrap this up. Connie, what can you say in a final 30 seconds or so of, I don't know, what can you tell us that would just enlighten us for the rest of the week?
Well, I would say if you have to pick one thing to carry with you, that's the most likely thing that's going to save your life, I would put a tourniquet in your car. I would get a good cat tourniquet and I would put it in your car because it may not be for you. You might come up on a wreck.
If I only had a tourniquet. I've got one, right? There you go.
Somebody's bleeding to death. But not anymore.
All right, Connie, we're going to wrap it up. I can't thank you enough for coming on finally.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can get you on again and maybe be a progressive type of deal. Tip of the week
sure.
from Connie Ellison. And give us some feedback, ladies and gentlemen. She'll be on YouTube probably Tuesday. And you can check that out. Like it. Comment positively. And hopefully we'll get her back on. So, Connie, it's great having you on. And, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a break. Trey, take us out. When we come back, we're going to have the awesome Master Cindy Key beating the heck out of me, probably with some other technique. Oh, no. She's got a knife in her hand. All right, we'll see you on the other side.
K
Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm in Cameron prides themselves on service, resourcefulness, knowledge of the law, and attention to detail. So if you or a loved one has been injured by someone else's negligence, they can help. Call 888-637-6347 for help today from Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm. Capolino Dodd Krebs Law Firm will work as hard for your family as you do. Call 800-460-0606 for Capolino Dodd Krebs.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Petros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com. Central Texas Martial Arts of Rocktail offers martial arts classes Tuesdays and Thursdays between 5:30 p.m. and 7 p.m. in their 1,800 square foot facility, which is located in Rockdale at 973 Highway 77. Learn confidence and control with mind and body at the Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Call or text Master Cindy Key at 254-721-2775 or just stop by. Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale, 254-721-2775.
Welcome back, everybody, to the High Cap Adventure Radio Program. We're here now with Master Cindy Key, owner of Central Texas Martial Arts Academy in Rockdale. Ms. Key, as always, welcome, and it's, I think, a pleasure to have you. You're going to beat me up, aren't you?
I might.
What do you got today?
Well, today I have, we're going to do a very simple, basic knife defense for if somebody's, like, just comes up to you and says, I want whatever. The first thing is try to pay attention and not let somebody come up to you with a knife. But, I mean, they could have it behind their back and you don't see it, and then they bring it out. The first thing I want you to know is don't leave your hand. If the knife is up here, your hands don't need to be low. So you want to bring your hands up, like, please don't hurt me. You know, have my hands open. They're not fists. I don't look like I'm fighting him like he has to defend himself. But I'm just going to have my hands open. Now, I don't want to stay in the center of him because any movement I make is going to trigger his reaction. So as I bring my hands up and I say, please, you know, I'll give you whatever you want, I'm slowly tracking to the outside of his arm so that, you know, if he does try to thrust, I'm already out of the way. I just have to bring my hand up to keep him from coming back, which that's what I'm going to do. He's going to, like, bring it to my face. I'm going to block with the back of my hand, turn over, because I want to have control of the weapon. So when I turn my hand over, I want to grab him where the wrist is, right here, the smallest part of the arm. If he thrusts really fast, I might end up blocking here first, but I'm not going to leave my hand there. I'm going to bring it down because this hand has a hook for me to hold on to right here. This is too big for me to hold on to, but right here I can hold.
And that's the wrist she's pointing at.
I'm pointing at the wrist, of his wrist. So I'm to the side of his body, and I've taken a step, not just totally sideways, but towards him at an angle, like going towards his back. I'm going to straighten his arm out, and I'm going to make sure that his palm is pointing away from me if I'm going to strike with the inward strike on his elbow. If he pulls his arm or something, his hand comes up here, then I'm going to come up. Because I want to make sure that his arm can't bend. And so when I strike it, I'm going to strike it to where he has damage to the arm. I may not break it, but I'm going to hurt it. he's already turned for me in a perfect position, because now I'm going to hit him with an elbow in the rib and come down on his groin, come over the top, and then I'm going to take him back the other way. I'm going to let him go where he wants to go.
She loves this. Okay, what else?
So anyway, let's redo that. So I'm not going to stay in front. So if somebody comes up to me and they have that knife, I'm going to say, hey, I'm going to give you what I want. Just let me get to my pocket. I'm going to move so that if he strikes, I'm already mostly out of the way. Then I'm going to use my forearm because it's a longer part. I won't miss as easy. If I just use my hand, there's a chance he could like adjust his arm and I might miss. But if he moves it up a little bit, I still have it. If he brings it down a little bit, I still have it. You can also use your shoulder. That will work also. I just like using my forearm because then I have other options, other stuff. I can do knife hand to the, or back fist to the nose, a knife hand to the neck, hit the ribs, hit the groin. When he tries to pull his arm back, I'm going to let him go. And I'm just going to bring him down here, and I'm making an S with his elbow so that there's no way he's going to be able to fight me, because all I have to do is walk him down.
Okay, Miss Key, tell him how to get a hold of you.
All right. I'm at off of Highway 77, about 1 mile past the 79-77 junction going towards Lexington. And my phone number is 254-721-2775, and you can text or call.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in